Okay, today is Wednesday, December the 20th, 29th day of the month of Kislev. This is the women's Chumashir. We are up to Dvarim, Perek Chof Aleph, Pasuk Chof Bet. Okay, we started this topic last week, Rabotai, concerning an individual who is to be put to death and then hung on a tree, that you are required to take him down that particular day, and not to leave his body on the tree overnight, but tikabar tikbarenu bayom ahu. We had seen Rashi's interpretation that Rashi believed that every single person who is chayav skila, is obligated to be hung on this tree. And everybody disagrees with him because that is the minority opinion in the Gemara, but everybody cites the Chachamim that it is only two specific instances of individuals who must be degraded in such a fashion by after they are executed, they are hung on this tree. That is the Migadev, somebody who curses HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Oved Avodah Zarah. But Rashi clearly said that Kol HaNiskalim, anybody who is put to death via stoning, is now hung on the tree. We did not say what prompted Rashi to make this comment and deviate from the Chachamim, the majority opinion. Why did Rashi cite the minority opinion rather than the majority opinion which everybody else cites? And what is driving Rashi is the fact that Rashi made a comment in his opening remark in the beginning of Pasuk Chof Bet. Take a look at Rashi's opening remark. If somebody shall engage in a transgression which deserves capital punishment, take a look at Rashi. Smichut haparshiyot. What is smichut haparshiyot? We've seen this 30,000 times. What is the connection between this topic and the previous topic? The previous topic which we had discussed was ben zoreru moreh. So Rashi is troubled. Why does this particular episode follow on the footsteps of Ben Soreru Moreh? So Rashi answered, to teach you something, that if a father and mother are going to exhibit compassion upon their child and not bring him to Beth Din when he should have been brought to Beth Din, what will the net result be? Not only will he rob from father and mother, he will then look to rob from somebody else. If the person does not have enough money to satisfy his addiction, what will he then do? He'll murder, and then he'll have to be executed. Very nice. That's what Rashi said. Now, this comment triggers or influences Rashi's opinion about who gets to be hung up. If the halacha was that the only two people who get hung up on this tree are the Megadev and the Oved Avodah Zarah, then it shares no common denominator with what? The Ben Soreru Moreh. The Ben Soreru Moreh is not somebody who would be hung if the punishment of hanging is limited only to two cases, namely the Migadev and the Oved Avodah Zarah. If it's not related, then Rashi's whole point of the smichut falls by the wayside. Because what is Rashi's point? If a parent is not going to fulfill its duty and bring the child to the Beth Din, when all the child did was steal from parents, the next thing that's going to happen is that he will steal from somebody else, then he'll meet somebody else who doesn't have enough money, will kill him, and what's going to happen? He will have to be killed, and then what's going to happen to him? He will be hung up on the tree. That's the connection between one parsha and the next. But if hanging him on the tree is limited only to two aveirot, migadev and avodah zarah, the ben soreru moreh will never be hung on the tree. So if the ben soreru moreh will never be hung on the tree, it undermines Rashi's entire attempt to establish the connection between this halakha and the previous halakha. Because according to everybody else, Rashi will say, why did the Torah choose to quote this halakha here after Ben Soreru Moreh? Where should the Torah have quoted this halakha? Where? Either after you discuss the prohibition of what? Cursing God. Or we discuss the prohibition of the Neged Avodah Zarah. So we find dozens of places where the Torah says you're not permitted to worship other gods. So we should find a very good location. There are many such locations in the Chumash where you can now list. And if you were to go ahead and engage in such a transgression, you know what? We're going to have to hang your body up on the street. Don't leave it there overnight. Why would the Torah choose to quote it here after Ben Soreru Moreh? Therefore, this now leads Rashi to conclude that from the textual point of view, the smichut ha-parshiyot, this now forces me to reject the Chachamim and to include an expanded form of those people who are hung. Namely what? Anybody who is executed by Beth Din shall now what? Be hung on the tree. So now I understand your son will be executed by Beth Din. Why will your son be executed by Beth Din? Because he will have murdered somebody. In which case, I will now have to expose you, the family, to such degradation. Therefore, what should you do? Make sure you bring him to Beth Din in advance. I can understand what the point would be. So what I'm suggesting is that what ultimately triggered Rashi to abandon the Chachamim and adopt the minority opinion is Rashi's concern for the smichut ha-parshiyot. Otherwise, Rashi feels uncomfortable as to why the Torah recorded these two psukim here and not in a more appropriate location that would have fit the halakha for all other commentaries who claim that the hanging procedure is limited only to two cases, when somebody curses God or worships Avodah Zarah. But any other death penalty does not, the person is executed, then taken straight to the cemetery. And as you well know, we have special cemeteries for Haruge Basin. Special cemeteries. They were not buried in our own cemeteries. Special designated Batei Din for those who were executed by court, but he would not be hung on the tree. That's point number one. Point number two, based on what we said, to expand. There was some debate and discussion as to what the phrase in Pasuk Chaf Gimel means, Ki Kililat Elohim Kalui. It was a very difficult phrase. So we'll read the Pasuk again. Lo Talin Nivlato Al Ha'etz. Do not allow the body to hang on the tree overnight. Ki Kobor Tik Berenu Bayom Ha'o. Body shall be buried that day. Why? Ki Kililat Elohim Talui. So far we have seen two interpretations, Rashi and the Rashbam. Rashi said, because it happens to be the curse of God, literally, or the shame of God is hanging. The shame, ridicule of God is hanging. Why? Rashi believes that man is created in the image of God. And Rashi cites his mashal of the twins. You have twins who were, one of them was a king, and the other one was Al Capone. And Al Capone was captured, and he was ultimately sentenced to hanging. So they hung Al Capone up. But somebody who sees him says, oh, the king was hung. Why? Because they look exactly alike. So too, claimed Rashi, when a human being who was created B'Tselem Elokim is hung, you might come to say, ah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hanging there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hanging there. His twin. That was Rashi's comment. Obviously, my emphasis on HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hanging there shows the obvious weakness to what? To this little mashal. Says the Ramban, everybody else, Mr. Rashi, I can understand when you have two human beings, one of them is a king and one of them is Al Capone, that somebody might mistake one from the other. But as much as a human being is created B'Tselem Elokim, ain't nobody going to is going to confuse you or me with God. And if we would be hanging there, no one would ever say, this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's a very cute little mashal, but the concern, claims all other Rishonim, is just not at all applicable. Not at all applicable. So therefore we saw two other interpretations thus far. We saw the Rashbam. If you remember, Rashbam interpreted the word Elohim as not God. Elohim refers to the Dayan. People are going to curse the judges for hanging somebody. Why? Because sometimes people don't understand the nuances of the law, and that often the halakha itself seems to be rather harsh. That for doing something which doesn't appear terribly serious, the death penalty is to be instituted. Particularly if, and I'm going to borrow for my convenience, Rashi's interpretation, that the hanging requirement is applicable not only to what? To those people who curse God or do Avodah Zarah, but anybody who's Chayav Skila. So I gave a little example. You turn on a little light on Shabbos. You turn on the flame. You stitch. You're doing knitting two lousy stitches. For that you're going to stone me? So people will start cursing the judges, and they will threaten the judges as a result. So this particular obligation to minimize the damage, make sure that the person is not hung up on that tree too long, according to Rashbam, is to protect the insult of the judge. Ki tilat Elohim. Elohim referring to the Dayan, as is referred to quite frequently in the Chumash, where the word Elohim refers to a Dayan. That is a second explanation. The third explanation was offered by Ramban and many others, that if you believe that the hanging procedure is limited only to whom? To these two Averot, Avodah Zarah and cursing God. Whenever somebody passes by, what will be the first words out of their mouth? What did he do to merit this? And what will you have to say? He cursed HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That in itself adds to degradation. That adds to the abuse of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not only did somebody actually curse, but somebody said he cursed God. And in order to minimize the degradation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, therefore we try to minimize the damage. Yes, it is a heinous a crime that it warrants hanging on the tree. Obviously, we're looking for some public humiliation, there's no doubt about it, but it has to be balanced by the potential danger that this will lead to further ridicule of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How will it lead to further ridicule? Because it will have to say, a person will have to say something about the transgression. And that will be counterproductive under those circumstances. That was the third interpretation. Today, Rabotai, we shall continue with another one. Possibly even two. And there are some who believe that the phrase Ki Kililat Elohim Talui is referring not to the previous phrase, it's not to be connected to the first half of the Pasuk, but rather to the second half of the pasuk, which we place no emphasis on whatsoever. And now I emphasize, you are to bury the person that day. Velo titamei et admatcha. And you shall not defile your land, asher Hashem Elokecha notein lecha nachala, which God has given us as an inheritance. So what will act as the defilement? What will defile the land? What will defile? Okay. If you ask, okay. If you hang the body, a hired body will defile the land. Okay? So in what respect will this act necessarily defile the land? That's question number one. Secondly, what impression would you now get about this entire prohibition in terms of its limitations? It's only in Eretz Yisrael, correct. Only in Eretz Yisrael do you have such a halacha. Because it says, v'lo tzitami ad mascha. But in Teaneck, New Jersey, it's not so terrible if we'll go ahead and hang somebody. If we should ever find a situation where you would have to be put up there because you were guilty of something. But the point is, lo titame et admatcha. So now, before I start elaborating on lo titame et admatcha, I'm going to finish the thought. There are those who believe that kililat Elohim talui is related to the last half of the pasuk. The Ramban quotes this as a possibility. Namely, since God would like to minimize Tumat Haaretz, if you do not minimize Tumat Haaretz, what will happen? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be very angry at the local residents. And how will he express his anger at the local residents? By cursing the area around the talui. Ki kililat Elohim. The curse of God will be directed at those who are in the immediate vicinity of the talui. Why will God decide to curse the vicinity around the talui? Why? Because he wants to make sure the lotitame atavmatha. That's a fourth possible interpretation. That the phrase kilat ahim talui is connected to the end of the pasuk. Yeah. Now there is something for those of you who read the Torah would say this is a very difficult interpretation. Why would this be a very difficult interpretation if you know something about the cancellation of the Torah? Because what is that? Etnachta, correct. Because under the word talui, there is an etnachta. That little semicircle, a little schmitchik on the top, is called an etnachta. An etnachta always comes at the end of a phrase. Always comes at the end of the phrase. It has a note almost resembling a sof pasuk, the end of a verse. In fact, many readers read it almost the same. They come to the same vocal intonation whenever you reach an etnachta, because the two notes that precede an etnachta also precede immediately a sof pasuk. They are mercha tipcha. That which is under kilulat is called a mercha, and that which is under Elohim is a tipcha. Ki kilulat Elohim talui. Talui, whatever it is, and then at the end of the pasuk, look, no tang lecha nachala, right? So if they both indicate an end of a phrase, and what Ramban is suggesting, don't make believe there is a red light here after the word talui. Make it a run-on. It's a run-on sentence, even though that's wrong. But Ramban suggests it, and it's going against the cancellation of the word indicated by the etnachta, which indicates that the phrase has come to an end. However, the Ramban suggests as a possibility, ki kililat Elohim talui, kililat Elohim yihyeh al haaretz asher svival hatalui, in the area surrounding the air. Now, in what way will the talui...
Is this an answer?
What?
Is this
he suggests two things. Yeah. In what way, Rabotai, will a hanging person defile the land, which now gets God's offset? In what way will a talui, defile the land? In what way? In what way? Give me some practical. Yeah.
Well, the fact that he uses the word nakala, the whole reason why God gave Jews Eretz Yisrael was because there was violence and things that the land couldn't take. So God is now assuming that you are going to behave appropriately when you're there. And if you don't, then you're doing what they did before. That's defiling.
Okay, that's correct. It's definitely defiling the land, and this is just symbolic then. That the engaging in this particular transgression is what really defiles the land. Good. What about the person hanging himself? What happens to it? Okay. Yeah. So all the tum'ah. So think about tum'ah. The lo titameh. What will? How can the person spread his tum'ah even though he's dead? What? Anybody? What? Anybody? Anybody who walks on the knee. What happens? Becomes tameh. Anybody who touches him becomes tameh.
So,
what?
But usually that body they put on the floor and cover.
No, that's not the reason. The reason why I put the body on the floor is, which is called hashkava, is because the floor was cold and it will delay the decaying process. That's the reason why we put a body after they put, because a bed, typically people died in a bed. A bed generates heat and will accelerate the decaying process. So as part of Kvod HaMeit, the first thing that you're supposed to do is take the deceased and put them on the floor, preferably not a carpeted floor, a stone floor or a wooden floor where, that's the symbolic nature of it. So here, it's going to literally, in your idea, it'll be conceptually defiled, it's a representative of the fact that they defile the land conceptually by engaging in such behavior, and in a physical sense. There are going to be people who will now be curious, they'll come and look, they'll touch, they'll want to see who it is, you know, who's hanging there, and they will become tameh. And that in itself spreads tum'ah, and for this reason, you are to minimize the potential damage and remove the person that particular day. And there were some who were misled into claiming that this prohibition of lo Talin Nivlato, do not allow the deceased to remain for a long time, is only in Eretz Yisrael. Because it says, below to Tameyat Ad Matcha. There are some who believe, Chizkuni and many others, that it's limited only to Eretz Yisrael. Because it says, below to Tameyat Ad Matcha. And the Ramban says, again, they blew it. Because the Pasuk, if you remember, how did I tell you to read the phrase lo talin nivlato al ha'ech? Does anybody remember what remark we made from last week? It was only 7 days ago. Lo talin nivlato al ha'ech. What did I say goes after the word nivlato? Ki'ilu. I'll ask you the question which will trigger it. Is there an Easter today to delay burial by 5 days?
Oh, no. Without a reason. Without a
correct.
Reason.
There is not. There is an Easter. How do I know that I'm not allowed to delay burial? Because it's convenient, or I'm lazy. I want to have it on a Sunday. So even though the guy got a Tuesday, I want to have it on Sunday. I don't want to miss a day's work. What's the reason? Why now? Because it says lo talin nivlato, and the Ramban said you put a little comma afterward. Nivlato is one thing. But there is a general isur of lo talin. You're never permitted to go as to be malin nivlato. Never permitted to be malin et meto. Ever. In which case, this prohibition applies all over the world. Because if you're going to delay burial, what will happen if you delay the burial? So the deceased is in your house, and what happens? Besides that, every time somebody walks into the house, what happens? They become tamei meis. Every time somebody else walks in the house, he becomes tamei meis. So the velo titamei, claims the Ramban, is applicable all over the planet. But there is a special prohibition where? In Eretz Yisrael. Now for your perfect illustration, where you can have the same love, but there is a double love in Eretz Yisrael. And we did it only a couple of years ago. No, it was only a couple of months ago, maybe a year ago. Please open up for 1 second to Devarim. Believe it or not, it's in Devarim. Yeah.
In our lifetime.
It is in your lifetime, right? Chapter 19, verse 14. Chapter 19, verse 14. A perfect parallel. Chapter 19, verse 14. Shishi, Parsha Shoftim. Says the Holy Torah. Lo tasig gvul re'acha. Okay? This has nothing to do with two pizza shops. That's what people like to expand it. And the rabbinic literature has expanded this to two pizza shops. But the simple shot has nothing to do with two pizza shops. It talks about, and I illustrated this graphically, you have two neighbors. Anybody here? Neighbors? 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 Excellent. Two neighbors. Okay. Two neighbors. Good. So in the middle of the night, Marty gets up in the middle of the night, 2 a.m, and moves the fence 2 inches onto Esther's property. 2 inches. Guarantee you Esther's never going to notice it. Either will Jock never notice 2 inches. A couple of months go by, next middle of the night, Marty gets out there, moves it another 2 inches. And after a year, he's got another foot of territory. No one ever noticed this. So without the Torah listing this pasuk, what avera would you tell him he violated? Vela! Thief! Gerdana! However, you violate a ganav even in Teaneck, New Jersey. You could be a ganav too. But this particular pasuk, Lo tasig gevul re'acha, asher gavlu b'nachlatcha asher tinchal, ba'aretz asher Hashem lekach noten lecha l'rishta, that additional prohibition for the exact same activity, you get 2 X's in your book. One for what? For lo tigzol. And the second one for lo tasig. And the lo tasig only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Why? As I say to the time. Where? That's it. But that doesn't mean that the action per se is not prohibited based on another address. On another address. So there's a clear example of where the very same activity can be prohibited universally, but in Eretz Yisrael, there's a separate prohibition. So too, there exists a same thing back in our text. Exact same thing. The law of lo talin nivlato, the law of lo talin applies where, Rabotai? All over the world. All over the world. But the second additional prohibition of the lo titameh et admatcha only applies where? In Eretz Yisrael. This is a lot. The lo titameh, thou shalt not defile my land. That's only in Eretz Yisrael. But the law of lo talin, the law of lot, not to delay whatsoever, should not apply at all. That just says it applies all over. Applies all over.
Is that the explanation for the end?
In which case? Maybe. That's a possibility. That's a possibility.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Does the hanging, is that the only way that you are Matari or by hanging?
No. Any delay, but especially hanging. Because it's not only those people enter your house. Anybody who walks by, it's going to be an attention grabber. In all probably the way it is, you just traumatize it. You want to get a close look to see who it is, so you'll walk right up underneath and see who's hanging there.
Right, what if it's not hanging? What if it's just hung up and down? Is that extra?
That's on the clue. That's correct.
But lo tamim, al yidei lo tamim.
No, not for lo tamim. No, I know.
Just stam? No.
Okay.
No.
Only hanging.
That's correct. That's correct. So, yes?
When it said lo tamim, I don't know if there's a connection, but it just reminds me of the idea that some people can't be buried in a regular cemetery, and some have to be, you know, does that have anything to do with it here? Is this a category of somebody
that person is more mitameh, right, than a regular dead person?
He's not really more mitameh.
It's
a good suggestion, because he's buried in a separate cemetery. Interesting suggestion. That's nice.
They're buried in...
Nice.
Are people... Who are hung or put to death by Betin,
yes. In fact, each one of the people who are hung, who are executed by Betin, has their own designated cemetery. Those who are stoned are buried in one cemetery. Those who are burnt in another cemetery. Those who are hung are buried in one cemetery. And those who are choked. And those who are beheaded are buried. So they have, instead of names, they have Beit HaKnesset show. I mean, the Beit HaKvarot. Beit Alamin Shel. It's great. You'll have big signs all over the highway.
Were there, really?
What?
How many were there? I mean, we say that a Sanhedrin that condemned one...
Yes, you only remember the first half of that statement.
Right,
that
and
was,
the second half is...
In Cain, Ata Marveh Shofchei Damin B'Yisrael. The rebuttal to Rabbi Akiva, who said that any Beit Din that executes more than once every 70 years is a murderer's row. Mm-hmm. So Rabbi Tarfon was said, you know, with your great genius, and what did he do? He confused the witnesses. He asked the witnesses questions which they couldn't answer, therefore the defendants were always let off the hook. So Rabbi Tarfon's response to is, who do you think is responsible for adding murderers to our thing? Because they know they're never going to be executed. The deterrent is there for a reason. The deterrent, the deterrent. But if you're not going to, you know, execute the deterrent, if you're not going to enforce it, then the whole effect of the deterrent is all lost. So Rabbi Tarfon was correct that if you're going to be so smart, my friend Akiva, and ask such questions, the Tosfos gives an example of the question that he asked. You'll never believe this. And he asked the witnesses, let's say somebody murdered someone. He asked the witnesses, did you notice if the deceased was a treifa? A treifa. Now, what is a treifa? If you have any of the defects, physical defects, that renders an animal a treifa and a human being a treifa.
A human being would fall into that category.
Yes. And the halacha is, believe it or not, the Gemara believes that if you didn't have, if you had any of this physical defects, for example, I'm just telling you what the Gemara says, missing a kidney. One of those things is missing a kidney. You murdered such a person, you were not executed.
But you would have died anyway.
Because he would have died anyway within 12 months. The Gemara says, Trefa eino chaya yoter miyud bet chodesh. A person who has one of these trefos cannot live more than 12 months. Okay, medical science has proven the Gemara wrong. That's a good question. That's the question which everybody has. So what? So you can only live 12 months. And yet, the contradiction, and I can't explain it, is that a horeg is a goseis. So a goseis is a person who is not, doesn't have a trefa, he's got, but he's on his last dying breath. The person's 119, 364 days, he's got a half hour left. And you murdered him, you chayv misa. But somebody's 12 years old who has a... Now, why couldn't the witnesses answer the question? Whether he was a traitor or not. How are they supposed to know about it? How are they supposed to know? So Besdin says, you don't know whether or not the person who murdered is deserving of death. Throw the case out. So Tosfos raised the question, you know what Tosfos said? Let's do an autopsy. And then we'll see if the guy doesn't have a missing kidney, now we'll execute him. So the whole question, she did the autopsy, is the whole question. But Rabbi, that was all based on Rabbi Akiva, who said, I'm going to ask these crazy questions and make sure that no one is ever executed. So that was part of Rabbi Akiva. He was such a good person, such an optimist, that he couldn't see that anybody who's even the most cruel person should not be able to be reformed. He was such an optimist, not only for Klal Yisrael, but for individuals as well. And it somehow influenced his thinking about the execution of Bethan. But Rabbi Yatar from what are you, serious? But anyhow, not if there is any a good reason. Here we will have to know whether the defendant is to be executed or not. That's a pretty good reason to do an autopsy. Yeah.
A question about chopping off the head. I thought you're not... There is such a...
It's one of the four. Sayif, it's called. But take a knife, chop the head off.
But I thought you weren't supposed to amputate or take any part of the body apart before you're buried.
Well, you're going to bury the head with him afterwards. It's ugly. It's ugly. Mashiach can do anything. That's why I am, I'm serious. People are very reluctant to sign the organ donor because they're worried about how will HaKadosh Baruch Hu revive you without a heart, without a liver. Trust me. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do Tchiyat HaMeitim, he can do it without a heart too. Promise you. And that's the least of the concerns. Good. So that's another interpretation. So the Ramban says, no, don't get so excited. Don't be influenced to say V'lo titameh azad matcha means that it's limited only to Eretz Yisrael. No. The second prohibition, the additional prohibition, happens to be limited to Eretz Yisrael, and but the regular prohibition applies at all times. The regular prohibition applies in Chutz La'aretz as well. One last point. There is, and again, this is quoted by several parshanim. The way the Torah describes it is v'lo titamei et admatcha asher Hashem elokecha noten licha nachala. Don't defile your land.
Your personal.
Ah. So now, here comes the issue. So what did the Torah allow? The Torah in this unit allowed the lay of burial. How did the Torah allow the lay of burial to some extent? Because what did it tell you?
Hang them.
Good. To some extent there is delay. Well, maybe there are other situations where it's valid as well. There is a concept in the Gemara, and it's used as a shoot of takeoff, spin-off of this phrase, that there is one holy city of ours that cannot be classified as admatcha. Cannot be classified as asher Hashem Elokecha notain licha in the individual sense. What holy city might that be? Yerushalayim HaKadosh. Why? Yerushalayim lo nitchalka lishvatim. Yerushalayim is not divided up amongst any of the tribes. It belongs to the entity of Knesset Yisrael. Each and every one of us has an equal share. Therefore, what's the hotel everybody goes to?
Bimba.
They are stealing our money. The Gemara says that somebody lives in Yerushalayim, they have no right to charge for a bed. It's not theirs. They are ripping you off. Ripping me off. They have no right to charge, in theory. Why? Because nobody owns Yerushalayim. Therefore, say several commentaries. Do you know why they bury at night in Yerushalayim? Because the heter of even delaying ever somewhat is, and when will you start violating Lo Titamei Et Admatcha? The next day is only if admacha. Only if it's no saying lecha. But in Yerushalayim, which doesn't belong to you, there should be no delay whatsoever. And therefore, this is the basis for what famous practice in Yerushalayim alone? Burial at night. In Yerushalayim, they bury at night. Why? because they don't believe that there is any legitimate extension based on this particular idea. And I'll tell you right here who quotes this. Right here on the spot, one of the... I saw it. But somebody points that out based on the fact that Yerushalayim is not called Yerushalayim Lo Nitchalka Lishvatim. And that manifests itself in a variety of halachot. Good. Yes, question.
What happened to Mikdash for the Yehud does not call it Hashem?
That's correct. Because it was not, there was no exclusive ownership. That's correct. Even though it was in the general parameters of half of Yehud and half Binyamin, but the section of the Mikdash itself did not belong exclusively to Yehud. It was a general overall area, but Yehud had no personal rights. No personal. Yes?
Okulus uses the word sliva for eighth. It's what we call a slav.
Yes. Cross. Oh, interesting.
Can you tell us that sliva is...
It's a beautiful question. I never noticed it. I don't know. That's an excellent...
In the Hebrew, it just says eight.
Excellent question. Okay. Wow, excellent point. It means a cross. A la slav.
Right.
Wow.
The Albanian were the crusaders.
Very, very nice. Excellent. I'm going to check 1 second. No. That's where I'm looking. If you look in Shmot chapter 20, I mean, in Dvarim chapter 20, where he writes, we just learned something about a tree, about cutting down a fruit-bearing tree.
Right.
So Unkelus says, Ilan. Lechod Ilan deteta are la Ilan de mechalhu. This is very interesting.
Ilan is a certain kind of tree.
It's a tree. It's a tree, a fruit-bearing tree. Ashelotetah, which you know it's not a fruit-bearing tree. So what impression is... This is unbelievable. Unkelus Hader lives when? During the time of the Tanoim. Yes. So Christianity, that's what you're suggesting. Correct. And it looks like why? A crucifixion. You're hanging up on a tree as a pole. That's an incredible observation. Sliva. But when Onkelus lived in the post-Roman, he's at one of the time of the Tanaim. That's after the Churban Bayis Sheni. Romans, what?
It's also something that... Yes.
Correct. That's right.
So could be
a
kind of
a... Okay, but the word salah. Salah. How would Unkelus translate the word, Yasu eight, Goa Hamishim Amah? How does Unkelus translate it? That would be a cross reference. An excellent observation. Didn't even notice it. Thank you. Vitit slow, the same thing.
Wow.
Where? Vitit slow on the verb. Vitalita oloto. Vitit slow earlier in the pasuk.
So he's talking about
something. Right, that's what it looks like. Chafet. Vitit slow yate out sliva. Unkelus.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Was he a Gera?
Yes, he was. Unkelus was a convert. So he knew very well what these guys were up to.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. It's fantastic. I gotta think about it. I don't know. But an excellent point. Gotta speak to historians about this. Right? Gotta speak to Dr. Berger. What he would comment about something like this, you know, in terms of Christianity, what an impact. Let's see what happens. Yeah.
People actually hung?
Yeah, of course they were hung. If you engage in these avarus, you are 100%. Sure. Yeah.
Have they found any of these places where these people were buried? Have these cemeteries?
I don't know. Okay, I just want to pass on, as it is Hanukkah, I want to leave you with one thought today on Hanukkah from the text, from the Chumash, but the Gemara's comment on the Chumash text. So if you can just please distribute these, we'll get 1, 2, 3. There you go. 1 thing for Hanukkah. Is it is Hanukkah. This is the same subject for Hanukkah.
You guys have
enough? No. We don't. Anybody missing?
Yeah,
we don't. Anybody missing?
Yeah.
Okay, here you go. Anybody missing? Okay. Anyone else? Anyone else? There you go. And one. Anybody else? Okay. Rebel time. This, what I'm showing you, is the last, the first page, it's bracketed on the bottom. We're going to read the last line of, this is Chof Aleph Amud Bet in Masechet Shabbat. The discussions about Hanukkah are found in 3 blocks of Masechet Shabbat, Chof Aleph through Chof Dalet. Here is this statement. Amar Rav Kahana, said Rav Kahana, it's bracketed, it's the last line of the page. Dorash Rav Nassan Bar Minyumei. Rav Nassan, the son of Minyumei, made this following halacha, Mishmei de Rabbi Tankum, in the name of Rabbi Tankum. What does he say? Ner shel Chanukah, shehinicho lemalo mechaf ama, psula. If the candelabra, the Chanukah menorah, is put more than 20 amot off ground level, which is 40 feet, so if you put it in your house, 40 feet off ground level, it's disqualified. You do not fulfill the mitzvah. Kisukah ukemavui. Just as the schach of the sukkah are not permitted to be in excess more than 40 feet high, can't have the height of your sukkah, and a mavui. A mavui is, without taking a long time, is an area that is enclosed with 3 sides. You have a garden apartment complex on 3 sides, forming like a chet or a U, but the 4th side opens to the public thoroughfare. So according to Torah law, you are allowed to carry inside the courtyard without any additional things. Because there are 3 walls surrounding it, we consider it like a Rashut HaRabim. But the rabbis said, we're afraid that if you're going to carry in the courtyard, you're not going to notice where the entrance is, you're going to wind up in a public thoroughfare. So at the public thoroughfare, you have to put what was called a mavui at that time. You put a little beam up on the top, a cross beam, like we have a lefty in the backyards, whatever it is. So how high can this lefty be? Only 40 amot. Only 20 amot, which is 40 feet. Very nice. Very nice. That's not my point. Next. Now that's obviously related to Hanukkah. Has to tell you how high the Ner Hanukkah is allowed to be. Next 3 lines. Ve'omar Rav Kahana also said, Darash Rav Nassan Bar Minyume Mishmei de Rav Tanchum. Rav Nassan Bar Minyume said the name of Rav Tanchum. My dechsiv, what is the intention of the pasuk which we just read this past Shabbat? The Habor Reik Ein Bo Mayim. The pit is empty. It had no water. Ask the Gemara. Nimash mashineh mar v'habor rei. If the Torah said that the pit is empty, eini yodeya she'ein bo mayim. Don't I know that there was no water in it? Why did the Torah have to say ein bo mayim? It already said habor rei. It was empty. Empty means empty. Elo. Ma Talmud Lomar Ein Bo Mayim. Why does the Torah write in addition to Reik Ein Bo Mayim? Say, to teach us, Mayim Ein Bo. There was no water in it. Avo Nechashim Ve'akravim Yeshbo. But there were deadly snakes in the pit. Rashi quotes this in Chumash. Rashi quotes this in Chumash. Quotes this Gemara. Now the question which I have asked, what is this doing in Masechet Shabbos in the discussion of Ner Hanukkah? So most people say it's got nothing to do with it, but the author of the statement is somebody who is not very well known. Those of you who are Gemara experts will know that Rav Nosson Bar Minyumi, in the name of Rav Tanchum, appears maybe 5 times in all of the Talmud, maybe less. So often the Gemara, as a way of remembering things, don't forget this was not written down, free association, that when you had an author quoted, who was not quoted rather extensively, so if you had to do that with Rabbi Yehuda, you'd be quoting everything, take it 20 years to quote everything Rabbi Yehuda said. But something that wasn't quoted very frequently, so they quote all of his famous sayings together, and therefore don't get all excited. There's nothing to be deduced from a conceptual point of view. That's what everybody says. The Rav once suggested something very nice, and he applied this to Hanukkah specifically. The Hashmonaim, they went to war. Why did they go to war? Because the Yevanim did not let us engage this mitzvah, that mitzvah. So forget about the fact that it may have been what's called Gzeirut HaMalchus, official government-sponsored anti-Semitic behavior, which gives you the just cause to engage in Yehareg V'Aliyavah. You're supposed to sacrifice your life. Forget about that for a minute. Let's just look at the transgressions themselves. Is a person obligated, if a Gentile comes over to you and says, if you circumcise your kid, I'm going to blow your head off. What are you supposed to do?
Go ahead and
make
my day.
That's it. No! No! You don't tell him that.
Why?
Because it's not one of the big rules. Only give your rights. Give us your number.
I don't.
That's what these laws, which he invented, which he copied for the Gemara. When you have a guy who tells you, if you don't kill that, or if you don't kill this person, I'm going to kill you. You tell him, go ahead, make my day, blow me away. Fine. But for Brit Milah, for Torah study, the Gemara doesn't say that. So why couldn't the Jews live with what? So there won't be any Torah study. So there won't be any Brit Milah. For that you have to go to war and run the risk that you're going to be overpowered. The Rabbim will overpower the Me'atim. Right? The Tumeim will overpower the Tahorim. They ran an incredible risk, the Hashmonaim did. And the Rav said, because there is no such thing as a person living in a vacuum. If your life is not going to be endowed with Torah, something else is going to fill that void. What's the void? What's going to be filled? Everything that the Yevanim believe in. Their ideology. Their philosophy. So it's not that the Hashmonaim decided, if we won't have Torah, so what? No. They came to the recognition that if they don't have Torah, something else is going to occupy their mind, their children's mind, and those values and mores and precepts are very, very dangerous to us as a nation. Where did Chazal see this? That if you don't have something positive, what automatically fills the gap? That's where they have, exactly. The Habor Reif, Ein Bo Mayim, says the Gemara. Mayim, Ein Bo. If you don't have something that will sustain life, it's not just going to be an empty bar. What's going to occupy its place? Nechashim ve'akravim is going to occupy its place. And therefore, the Hashmonaim understood very well that if we are not going to engage in an active battle on the part of promotion of Torah way of life, the consequence will be not just the absence of Torah. The consequence will be that other values which undermine our understanding of what is right and what is wrong, what is ethical, what is unethical, what is decent, what is ugly, will automatically pollute our minds. It's the same analogy of a habol leg. If there is no mayim, something else will occupy the chashim va'akravim yeshbo. Have a good day. See you next week.